Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Understanding Train Station.
Welcome back. I'm back in Cincinnati.
And I'm still in Munich.
Yeah. Wait, no. No, never mind. Let's do it again, because that episode hasn't even come out yet. Die letzte ist doch die, wo wir beide in Cincinnati sind. Yeah.
Did you get that?
I'm so confused.
Also, ich verstehe nur Bahnhof.
You only understand train station? It's all Greek to me.
Understanding Train Station. Living between cultures with Josh and Phelan.
Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Understanding Train Station.
Welcome back. We've both actually been in Munich in the meantime, and I'm already back in Cincinnati. We did record an episode in Munich together, but that's going to come out at a later point. But yeah, I'm back in Cincinnati now.
Yeah, we're back both home. It's just funny still saying like home for me is Munich and Cincinnati for you. I mean, Cincinnati's normal for you now, but
yeah,
Both is home. Exactly. It was cool having you here though too, especially because you were able to see my apartment. So now like, you know, the background of where I record.
Yes.
It was fun having you here. And
yeah, I've seen the messy lamp in the background, the messy chandelier installation.
I still haven't gotten light bulbs yet, but that's definitely on the top of my list of things to do.
That's always how it goes when you move into a new place. You're always like, oh, this will do for now. I'm going to do this later. Like, for example, let's say hang up pictures, get light bulbs. Mm-hmm. These like tiny things that don't really matter in the beginning. And then you end up living there for half a year and you still haven't done it. Or you don't even do it until you move out.
Exactly. I think with the light bulb, I keep telling myself I'm going to buy new ones. But I think probably I will buy new ones when this one burns out.
Okay.
That'll probably be the motivating factor to go buy some. But hopefully I can get my stuff together and do that before. But yeah, so you've been on a kind of a whirlwind of trips.
So have you. Because you also took the same trips, just in the other order. You went from Munich to the U.S. and then from the U.S. to Munich. And I did it the other way around. Were you going to ask how it was? Sorry, I interrupted
you. Yeah, no, you're fine. I was going to ask how it was. Is it weird being back? Is it nice to be back in Cincinnati?
I can't really tell. It was actually really, really good to be home this time because, first of all, the weather was amazing. Which
when you say
you
home,
can't
you
really
mean Munich, right?
Munich, yes. Being home in Munich, because the weather was amazing, and you can't really rely on that, even in August, even in the summer in Munich. So that was really cool. And then also everything was just so vital, and you could do things in Munich. Which last time I was there, you couldn't do shit. You couldn't do anything.
Yeah.
I basically met up with some of my friends over Christmas. Not even all of my friends, because everyone was being really careful, as we should. But everyone I met up with, it was like a one-on-one walk outside through the park or around the lake. And this time I could go to a restaurant. I could go to a beer garden. We even went to like a small little version of like a beer festival almost.
Yeah.
It was a little disappointing, I'll say, but oh well.
Better than nothing.
Yeah. Which like by we, I mean, you were there too. Mm-hmm. We both went there. So because of that, it was kind of hard to come back to Cincinnati, to be honest, because Cincinnati kind of meant work and lots of responsibilities. And I kind of this time had almost like a vacation in Munich. Like I worked a little bit in the first week, but then it was almost like just enjoying myself, like, you do on vacation, you just get up every morning and you're like, oh, what am I doing today? Meeting up with this friend, meeting up with this family person, going shopping, doing fun stuff. A friend of ours also came over to Munich and we went on a sightseeing bus together. You didn't come on the sightseeing bus, but like I did. So I was a tourist in Munich, basically. So, yeah, it was a really good time.
It was cool to have you here, like I said. I mean, also like, because for my new roommates, they know of you and like the podcast and that we do that.
Weird.
But it was just cool to like have the two worlds kind of collide a little more. But that's the cool thing. And I think that's one of the things that I like about our podcast is like, I don't know, I think it's really unique the fact that you live in my hometown and I live in your hometown. But
yeah,
we
didn't
have a friendship before that too.
Yeah, we didn't even know that when we started the podcast that you were actually going to live in Munich. I mean, we kind of had a hint that maybe that might happen. But it wasn't set in stone at the time. So, this is really cool.
Well, I mean, as you guys know, unless you have anything else to add, Feli, I was kind of going to jump into the topic for this week. as we said, we've been traveling a lot. So in the meantime, we've been kind of keeping up with the questions that you guys have been asking and posting on places. And then I put on Instagram today that we're going to do a Q&A session. So some of you guys sent some questions in. So that's the topic of this week's episode, is just a Q&A, us responding to your questions and giving our opinion and just some more insight into our answers to your questions. So the first question is from Get Ricked, I guess, .910. And they ask, was it difficult learning the vocabulary for topics you did not learn in a class? What do you think, Feli?
I feel like this is your question because you always say that about the food vocabulary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right.
You always said that you're lacking on the food vocabulary in German. And you're always like, it's not my fault. I didn't. Mm-hmm. I skipped that class where we learned about the food. Do you have anything to say about that?
I mean, I do. I mean, I wasn't thinking about food when I read the question, but now that you bring that up, yesterday someone was talking about Himbeeren, and I can't remember exactly what that is. Is it raspberry?
Yes.
Okay. I see, like, that's like an example that I can't remember for whatever reason.
Josh, your German is so good, and you've never had to talk about raspberries until now.
I mean, I have. It's just not something that I talk about very often.
But, like, you've been living in Germany for 8 months almost at this point. What about, like, the grocery store? You don't see, like, actual raspberries or raspberry yogurt or, I don't know, ice cream or... You don't see those words and then...
I see the words. Like, I know the word Himbeere and I know that it's a flavor that I like. I just can't... I couldn't necessarily tell you, like, oh, that's raspberry.
Okay,
like,
you knew it was some kind of berry thing or something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like I said... Because obviously you know Beere, yeah.
The word isn't foreign to me. It's just the translation... Yeah. It's the same thing with, like, Schnittlauch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, chives, right?
I think it's chives. Yeah, chives in English.
And I always struggle with that one, too.
But I feel like I've really experienced Schnittlauch for the first time in here in Germany.
Yeah, it's not really a thing. Do you know Kresse in Germany? Okay, it's you can actually buy it at the store, too, but it's also a very common thing to grow yourself. Like, you do it in kindergarten often because it grows so easily. You really only need a paper towel for it to grow on. You don't even need soil. It's also kind of like an herb, and it's very similar to Schnittlauch in the way that we use it in Germany, or at least in Bavaria we do. It's like this little, it's like almost like little like kraut. So it's like, it doesn't grow high. It just grows very low, and it's kind of bushy. And you just cut it off, and you can, for example, put it on a butter bread, and then you have a... Kressebrot, like you have bread, butter, and then like just put this stuff on. It's a little bit like spicy almost in a way, a little bit like Schnittlauch too, like a little bit garlicky in a way. But
what's it called? Kresse?
Kresse, yeah. It doesn't
with an E, with an A or with an E?
With an E.
Okay.
Yeah. K-R-E-S-S-E. At least I think so. I haven't spelt it in forever. It's not necessarily something that you... eat a lot, but I actually saw it the other day again because I was at a German grocery store and I was looking for something in the like initial or it's sometimes like the snack section, and like it's like this refrigerated area where sometimes they'll have like to-go salads and stuff like that, and they had like little Kresse things there that they were selling, and I was like, wow, I haven't thought about Kresse in forever. And then I realized that I don't think that that's a thing in the US.
I mean, did you look up the translation?
I did not, but I'm doing it right now.
Yes. You're looking up the spelling and the translation.
Okay, I did spell it right. Okay, the translation is Kress, C-R-E-S-S. How helpful.
There's a thing like watercress, isn't there?
Maybe, I don't
know. I don't know. but back to the question, maybe. As far as like other learning words that I didn't learn or learning vocabulary that I didn't learn in class, I don't know if it's been particularly hard. I think a lot of it is you just pick up on it from your daily life.
Yeah.
And I think we've both talked about this is as far as like trying to get our second language to a higher level, unless you actively work on it, you're not going to learn a lot of words.
I mean, you learn them passively here and there. Like, that's how it works automatically, like, in everyday life. You'll definitely learn words, but you might not even really notice. Sometimes we... I notice it with you, for example, or when I'm with another friend and they actively teach me a word, then I'll be like, huh, I just learned a new word. But other than that, I don't really even pay attention to it. It just automatically happens. That's kind of how language learning goes at this point. I feel like you just pick up on things, and you're so good at understanding things out of context anyways, like understanding the gist without knowing every single word, that over time, if you've heard the word in that context a few times, you kind of know the meaning of the word, you might not know the exact literal translation into the other language. You might have a guess what it could be, but I feel like that's kind of how learning vocabulary works at a certain level of speaking even language.
And even in your native language, I think that's the case. I mean, that's how you grow your vocabulary. Yeah. I had one specific example, though, today from work, actually. I was sitting at work working on a project where there needed to be some cavities, like little kind of cutouts in a steel or in a, aluminum plate. And I was having to write the description in German, and the word Aussparung came to mind. Uh-huh. And I was like, I mean, for me, it was like, I think that makes sense in this context. And then I put it into Google and I was like, let's go. Like, I didn't actually actively learn that word. It was just something that I've heard from colleagues, I think, at some point. And it just, you kind of pick up on it. And I knew from the context, like, this sounds right. And then I confirmed it. So
yeah, that's super like a detailed word even. You wouldn't really use that unless it's like a technical context. So good job.
Yeah. No, I'm not trying to pat myself on the back by any means. It just was something that it was like, I think it depends on the context and the people that you're around in the, and you just pick up on different words. If I was in a medical context, I wouldn't understand a lot.
No, that happens to me a lot too, where I'm like writing something, for example, and then I kind of feel like, I think there is a phrase that kind of sounds like this, and I might not even get every word of the phrase right, but then I type it into Google and I'm like, oh yeah, that is a thing. Did I ever learn this actively? No, but I must have picked up on it somewhere and it was just somewhere in my head. Or sometimes I just feel like, I think there is a really good word to describe this concept in English. I don't think there's a good word in German, but I think there is one in English. And then I usually can't even think of it, but then I look it up and I'm like, yeah, I knew I've heard this before.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how I experience these things a lot. But to get back to the question, was it difficult learning the vocabulary for topics you did not learn in class? See, for me, I feel like I didn't really learn a lot of vocabulary in class. I mean, of course, I learned a lot still, but I wasn't the best student in language classes to actually study vocabulary. Mm-hmm. And it was always difficult for me to remember words unless I needed them in an actual real life situation. So I feel like I can't really differentiate in my head between the words that I've learned in a class and the words that I've learned later on, because I feel like most of the words I've learned later on.
Yeah, I would agree. I think like in class, you get a good basis to then learn words more naturally.
Yeah.
So I don't know if I would say it was difficult. I think it's something that you don't really realize when you're going through the process, when you start learning words just from everyday conversations then.
Yeah, I feel like it's almost easier because as we just said, or as I just described, you almost learn to pick up on the words automatically, so you'd never have to really sit down and learn it actively, unless sometimes there's more complicated words, and then I will, for example, ask you or ask one of my other friends for them to repeat the word several times, and then I'm going to look it up how it's spelled because I still can't really picture it in my head. Sometimes that goes for medical terms, for example, or just more complicated words where I'm like, wait, how do you spell this? How do you say this again? And then I repeat it a few times, and then I'm like, okay, I think I got it now, and then I probably forget it again.
Yeah, I have another example of like kind of one of more those type of words, and I think it depends. For me, the words that are hard to remember are words that are used differently grammatically between English and German. Like the word Widmen, I've struggled with remembering like the best way to translate that. It's like to be dedicated to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's definitely words that I still to this day just struggle with remembering. I always know it's the same kind of words. But to give like a whole scenario, like when I was in the hospital last year because I broke my wrist, I definitely had to deal with a lot of medical terms that I wasn't necessarily familiar with. I kind of picked up on them also out of context because if like the doctor goes ahead and like gives you an injection and then says something about it, you kind of understand what they probably mean. But I remember that also you were actually with me in the hospital that one day, and I was very glad that you were there. I don't know if I actually asked you a question then. I think I understood most of what they were trying to say.
I don't think you did.
But I felt good just having you there just in case that you could translate if, you know, because I got surgery that day and I was basically alone besides you were there. But they asked me all these questions and I had never dealt with anything like that in English before, so that's definitely a tricky situation. Or legal stuff too, insurance things, all that like tricky stuff that's already tricky in your native language, and then you suddenly have to do it in a second language. Yeah, that's usually difficult to handle.
Yeah, Definitely. No, for sure. And it's always good to have then like a friend who can help you out with that.
Yeah. A word came to mind that I always struggle with, and it's kind of embarrassing because I'm not 100% sure if I know it right now. And it's such a simple word. It's an organ that you have in your body. And I've learned this word like 1,000 times, and for some reason I can't remember it. But is it intestines or is it intestines? Okay, it's intestines.
Yeah. What did you think the other pronunciation was going to be?
Like, sometimes I forget the word entirely. Then I'm like, not sure. Is it intestines?
No,
I don't know why. I don't think I've ever heard that pronunciation, but sometimes I can't even think of it at all. And then I go, you know, my digestive organs.
Is it Eingeweide in German? No.
I mean, yeah, or there's a lot of words. I mean, Darm.
Or Darm.
You can literally just say der Darm, which technically is just singular. But if you say Darm, it also kind of refers to all Därme. So different, like the different ones. And then you can also say Gedärme. So like Eingeweide, Gedärme. That's more like an old-fashioned word.
Gedärme is old-fashioned?
A little bit, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a really good example is medical terms. Like I had to get an ultrasound like on my stomach. I was at the doctor. Mm-hmm. And they were like, these are your different organs. And like, oh, I think I've talked about it on the podcast talking about thyroid, which is... We were talking about this in person, actually.
Yeah.
Or like they were saying, this is your spleen, but I don't remember the German word for spleen either.
What's spleen again?
I
mean, okay, it's a dumb question, but can you describe it real quick? Because
I don't know what it is.
It's not your bull spine, right? No.
I don't think.
This is going to be so embarrassing.
We're not doctors. Forgive us. Let's see. Spleen. Milz.
Oh, okay. So
Yeah. So like those are contexts.
I feel like we've talked about that before, Josh. For some reason, I think we had a conversation about myths before, which is...
Possibly.
I don't even...
Random.
Yeah. Anyways.
So let's get back to the questions.
Let's move on. Yeah, this is getting kind of embarrassing. The next question is, what is the funniest word in each other's languages? Which is a tricky question because these kinds of questions require preparation, I feel like.
Yeah.
But I'm a smart person and I looked through the questions earlier and I was like, damn it. Because you just know you've experienced so many moments where you were like, wow, that's such a funny word. But then, of course, you don't write it down. So, like, you forget about it. But I did a Google research and I found a few pages where there were a few words in English listed where I felt like, yep, that one, I agree with that. For example... Bamboozle, or what was the other one that I really liked? Canoodle, which I learned, I think, in a sitcom. They said,
canoodle.
Yeah, we've been canoodling, which I think is kind of supposed to be a mix of like cuddle and more. Going a little bit further. Let's see what this says. Okay, canoodle, meaning kiss and cuddle. Oh, I don't know how to pronounce this word.
Oh.
Amorously. Amorously. Please help me.
I don't know how to pronounce that word either.
You know what I mean?
Amorously, probably.
Amorously.
Like full of love.
Yes, yes. You know what I meant.
Yes.
Funny because if you had a very traditional grandmother, this is the word she used to describe romantic affection. It made you giggle then, and it's still funny now. Okay, thanks, websites, for describing why it's funny. But no, I think canoodling is funny. As I said, bamboozle. Ooh, shenanigans.
Mm-hmm.
I always like that word. We should probably describe what the other words mean. What does bamboozle really mean, though? I didn't really know.
For me, like if someone is bamboozled, it means like if you get bamboozled, at least I think. And for me, that means like you get taken advantage of.
Okay. I didn't fully know.
It's not a word that I use every day.
Yeah. I always thought it had something to do with like pranks, but that the way that you describe it sounds a little bit more serious than just a prank.
I mean, if I was really taken advantage of, like, I would say ripped off, like someone ripped me off.
Yeah.
But like, oh, someone got me. They bamboozled me. It's more of in a playful manner.
Yeah. Okay. So I guess I kind of had it right. Then shenanigans is just kind of, I don't even know how to translate that into German, honestly. I don't think there is a German translation right now.
I mean, for me, shenanigans, I mean, what would, do you want to describe what shenanigans means?
Like, things that you're up to, like I don't know how to describe it.
I think the best way to describe it is mischief. which is also not like a very common word, but like
no.
Mischief is like, yeah, if someone's being like a Frechdachs.
Unsinn yeah. machen or something like that, I mm-hmm. think, right? Yeah, like, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Oh my God. I suck at or,
like,
these things.
To be like a batsy, like a little kid who's messing around and being mischievous. He's up to no good. He's just being.
But shenanigans doesn't describe the person, right? It describes the activity.
Correct. It's the action.
Of, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let me see. Hold on. Let me give you one more. Ooh, okay. This one isn't on the list here, but I thought of that. It's not necessarily funny, but when I heard it first, I always really liked it. Like, that word kind of makes me happy. And it's the English word duh. When, like. Which we don't really have that in German. We have doch.
You're right.
But you can also use that in other contexts in English. For example, ja, natürlich. Kind of like as in like, duh.
I love that. I've never thought of that, but you're right.
Yeah.
Duh.
Like, for example, if you asked me, do you like living in Cincinnati? I'd be like, duh. I've been living here for 5 years.
Yeah,
It's kind of like, yeah, obviously, but yeah, yeah. in a more funny way without actually saying an actual word, because it's more just like a sound that you make, and it's mm-hmm. spelled D-U-H in writing yep. usually. So for those of you who didn't know the word, you're welcome. Yeah, I always really like that word.
Yeah, I like it too. It inherently makes the other, it's you say it like duh, like to it makes the other person feel like you idiot, like duh,
yeah.
you idiot.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right. That comes. That's a funny word, and I've never heard a German equivalent. I'm trying to think if there are any German words that I think are particularly funny. One that comes to mind is Kuddelmuddel.
Mm-hmm. It's like a chaos.
Which, yeah, chaos. What else comes to mind? Are there any words that I like? Like, I always smile when I get the opportunity to say them. I don't know. Kuddelmuddel comes to mind. It's not necessarily funny, but I don't know if I've told this story about Geschlechtsverkehr.
No.
I was in class at the University of Cincinnati in my German class, and I don't know where I saw Geschlechtsverkehr, but like written. And I understood the word Geschlecht as being like the sex of a person, and Verkehr as traffic. But I couldn't figure out what the two words meant together, so yeah. I asked the professor, who was Jennifer Kelly, like a little old, really nice woman who is the professor. And I raise my hand and I ask her what Geschlechtsverkehr is. And she just looks at me and says, sexual intercourse. And I was so uncomfortable. But I think just the fact that it's so literal is just funny. And I think that's true of a lot of the words, the German words that I find funny. And I know you're probably thinking all of the animal words.
As always.
They're my
Josh
go-to
classic
funny
list.
Words.
Yeah.
Exactly. But I think I've gone through them here on the podcast maybe before, but one of my favorites is porcupine, which is Stachelschwein, and that like a porky pig.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. Those are some. There are normally some funny Bavarian ones, I think, that are the ones that I'm like, oh, that's
yeah,
that,
like
they make
like
me
you
laugh the most.
Like you just said, Bazi, for example.
Yeah.
Or uh-huh. something like that, or Gspusi, yep. or
yeah.
I don't know.
Uh huh.
Now I can only think of like sexual terms.
Oh man.
Schnucksen. I'm trying to think.
Oh yeah, exactly. Oh, come on, Josh. You have to have some better examples.
I have to probably explain. Gspusi is the Bavarian dialect word for a lover. And Schnucksen means to have sexual intercourse, to have yes. Gender traffic. Which, to explain that, actually, just to be accurate, I'm not quite sure if that actually does refer to Geschlecht in this case, if it refers to gender or sex, because Geschlecht can also technically mean your, how do you even say this in English? Geschlechtsorgan.
Your sexual organ.
Yeah. So Geschlecht can also refer.
Reproductive organ.
Yeah, can refer to your sexual or reproductive organ also. So it's probably more
that.
Yeah, you can, it's not a very common thing to say. I think I would argue it's maybe a little bit more formal and mm-hmm. or also a little bit old-fashioned, mm-hmm. but you can technically say mein Geschlecht and refer to your penis, for example. And I think it probably comes more from that obviously the organs are having traffic.
Oh, man. I think, like I said, it's mostly like Bavarian words that I think are just like cute and fun. Like,
yeah.
I think of like instead of Schule, you saying Schui.
Mm-hmm.
Like the E sound that you get a lot in Bavarian, I just like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I don't have any other examples, unfortunately, but I definitely like the word Kuddelmuddel.
Okay.
It's just a fun one to say.
There we go. So. I think we answered the question. I think we need to also move on a little bit faster because, yes. as always, we're spending a lot of time here. Okay, so this question, the one that we just answered, came from Plitzdom. And the next one comes from Lubastida. It's kind of tricky on Instagram because everyone has mm-hmm. a username, so it's kind of hard to read those. But the question is, what Latin American country would you like to visit?
I would say on the top of my list right now is Mexico. And I have plans to visit Mexico at the end of the year. So hopefully yeah. everything works out and I'm able to do that. But I would also say that Colombia is high on the list as well.
Okay.
So.
For me personally, this might piss a lot of people off, but like Latin America isn't necessarily at the top of my list for traveling mm-hmm. at all. But I'm probably going to go to Peru sometime next yeah. year, maybe.
That would be fun. Yeah, Peru's yes. a really fun place. And we've both
been
to and we've both been to Puerto Rico
as
well.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
So we've been to Latin America.
Yeah. It's just like it's a funny mix cuz it like technically is American or US territory, but mm-hmm. when you're there it really doesn't feel like that at all.
No. Yeah. But yeah, so that I would say that's our answers to that question. So we got a couple questions from Lubastida. The next one is, are you both interested in learning another language? In my case, the answer is yes. I've talked about this on the podcast a couple of times that I'm trying to learn French right now. Trying, but not necessarily trying too hard.
There is another question somewhere where someone was asking about your French progress, I think. but for me, no. Honestly, no. I know it sounds weird, but like, I'm not really the one of us who's always been super interested in languages. Like I like using a language in everyday life, but I don't really need another language right now, and I also don't really have the time to just learn a language that I then would never need or use just for fun or just for education, which I think that's it's awesome when people learn languages. It's just not on my priority list right now. So
I think that's completely legitimate. But yeah, I know for me learning languages is just something I enjoy too, so it's like it's not, I don't see it as work oftentimes. It's just something I enjoy. But yeah.
Yeah.
So that's my answer to that question.
Then the next question says, is Josh going to live forever in Germany or is it just for some years? Josh.
I mean, I'm not going to say I'm going to live here forever because I try to stay open to whatever may come. But I'm really enjoying my time here right now. And at this point, just kind of leaving it open-ended to see where life takes me.
Yeah.
So do I see myself moving back after 2 years at this point, despite what my family hopes? probably not. But at some point, I don't know. Maybe I'll move to another European country. Maybe I'll move to Latin America. Who knows? I'm just kind of open to whatever may come. So I can't say I'll stay here forever, but I'm enjoying my time here and don't necessarily see me moving in the near future.
Yeah, so same as me, kind of. It's been 5 years for me. And I would have never said that in the beginning. Like, how long mm-hmm. are you going to stay in the U.S.? Oh, probably like at least 5 years. No, yeah. I would have never, ever made that decision. But I was just like, well, let's see. And then also, mm-hmm. like, obviously I was lucky with the visa situations and everything. But so are you, getting a job.
Yeah, definitely.
Except it's a little bit easier, luckily.
Yeah.
In the European Union, but still.
But I mean, the fact that I had the qualifications to be able to get the visa, I'm very grateful.
And the connections also.
Yeah.
Your chair is creaking
it's
a
my
lot
table.
Right now. Oh, it's your table.
It's my table. Yeah, I need to not lean on it.
If I ever were to record an audio play in the future and I need some creepy sounds, I'm going to totally ask you. That totally sounds like going up some old stairs in like some haunted house. And you don't know what's awaiting you in the
attic.
It's
not a good desk. It's not a good desk. So the next question is from Corst Heaven. And the question is, how closely do you both follow politics in both countries and where can each of you vote?
Okay, well, we can both vote in the country that we don't live in.
Exactly.
Because I'm a German citizen and you're an American citizen, so I can only vote in Germany and you can only vote in the U.S.
Yes.
And I follow politics in both countries. I don't follow politics super closely, though. There's definitely a lot of people who follow it a lot more closely. I usually just follow the really important things. Like, for example, right now, people are campaigning in Germany, and I don't care about every single thing that each of the candidates says on their events and their little campaign interviews and stuff like that, because I already know what my political standpoint is anyways. So it's, and I know that there is a lot of drama going on in Germany right now, a lot of scandals and people, you know, the candidates, just none of the candidates are extremely popular this time around, kind of comparable maybe to the last election in the States. But yeah, I kind of know what's going on there overall, but I don't read every single article about that stuff because I feel like it doesn't even matter in the end what each of the candidates has said in one of the interviews. I know what I'm voting for, and I know what their overall political agenda is.
I think also, I mean, at least, and it would be interesting maybe for us to talk at some point about kind of the German political system, but how, like, you don't really elect the chancellor anyway.
Yeah, we should definitely talk about that because the election is coming up. It's in less than a month is when it takes place. It's on September 26th, which Germany always votes on a Sunday. But maybe we can just dedicate the next episode to that.
Yeah, for sure. Let's do it.
Elections and voting systems. And I also know that it was funny to see while I was in Germany that there was an official headline somewhere where it says the candidates are officially starting their campaign now. And it was 6 weeks in advance. Whereas in the US, they campaigned for 2 whole years.
I have to say that's one thing that's really nice about Germany is that there aren't these long drawn out political. I mean, there are always political battles, but not these long campaigns.
Yeah.
But I guess to answer the question from my perspective, or for me, I used to follow politics a lot more when I was living in the U.S. I definitely still follow mostly American politics, which is relatively easy too because American politics tend to be covered in German media as well. I mean, not super far in depth like you would get in the U.S., but still really quality coverage. So I definitely follow American politics. As far as German politics are concerned, I try to keep up with what's going on and like who the candidates are, what the different parties stand for. But I don't really like sit there and read articles. And I used to be a pretty avid Tagesschau watcher. But now that I live with people who don't speak German, it's not as something like, I don't know, it's not as big of a thing, of a part of my life anymore. So I try to keep up with it, but I don't let myself get bogged down with politics like I used to. And I feel like my quality of life has gotten better since.
I
stay informed, but not as emotionally attached to it.
Yeah, that's probably a good thing. Tagesschau, for those of you who don't know, that is like the most prestigious main news show in Germany. The main Tagesschau always airs at 8 p.m. every night, but they also have other shows throughout the day. And it's by the öffentlich-rechtliche Rundfunk, so like by the publicly
public
funded,
public broadcasting.
Yeah, it's TV in this case, Tagesschau. But I mean, Tagesschau nowadays is all kinds of media. They also have podcasts and everything. But it's really like rated the news show that most people trust. It's very objective and very high quality.
And you can also watch it on YouTube too if you're interested in just getting a perspective of it. So that's cool.
I can already see people tear me apart for saying the Tagesschau is very objective because I know that like there's so many trolls on the internet who are like, no, all publicly funded media, they're all left, which like it is kind of true that journalists in general as a profession are leaning a little bit more towards like left. But as a journalist, you are obligated to report neutrally about the parties. And I do think that Tagesschau does a really good job with that. Anyways, moving on. Let's see. To get myself in trouble here.
No, I was going to say, I mean, no matter what you say, there's always going to be someone who disagrees. So.
I know. Okay, the next question comes from, I don't know how to read that name, 5U5N3. And it says, welche Erfahrung habt ihr zur, oh, that's German. Okay, so probably 5 U5 an 3. Welche Erfahrung habt ihr zur Anerkennung von Uni-Abschlüssen aus USA in Deutschland und andersherum? So, what's your experience with Uni-Abschlüssen? With university diplomas or degrees being recognized in the US from Germany? So, German university degrees being recognized in the US and vice versa.
Exactly.
That took me a while you to translate that.
It's a little tricky.
Okay, let's answer this question in German since it was asked in German. And for those of you who are listening on the audio version and who don't speak German, we're just going to put the time codes in the description box or in the show notes so you can skip this part if you want to. We're going to summarize it in English afterwards briefly. For those of you who are watching on YouTube, you can activate the subtitles.
Genau. Vielleicht sollte ich anfangen, weil ich tatsächlich Erfahrung damit habe. Ich glaube, in deinem Fall ist es...
Es wurde automatisch anerkannt. Also man musste da nichts anerkennen lassen. Von daher erzähl du einfach zuerst. Genau.
Nee, also ich habe meinen Uni-Abschluss von den USA. Also ich habe Wirtschaftsingenieurwesen und Germanistik studiert. Aber es ist auch ein bisschen verwirrend, weil Germanistik war in meinem Fall einfach ein Double Major. Und ich habe nicht irgendwie versucht, das anerkennen zu lassen. Aber der Prozess an sich war ziemlich einfach. Es gibt vom Kultusministerium oder wie auch immer das heißt, eine Abteilung, die dafür zuständig ist. Ich weiß nicht mehr, wie das heißt, aber das können wir gerne in den Kommentaren schreiben oder halt in den Shownotes. Aber da musste ich tatsächlich nur meinen Transcripts von den USA reinschicken und dann wurde das einfach abgearbeitet und die haben dann einfach verglichen, welche Kurse ich belegt habe, also wie es sich halt mit einem deutschen Abschluss übereinstimmt, mehr oder weniger. Und ja, also ganz ehrlich gesagt habe ich jetzt mittlerweile die Details vergessen, genau wie das abgelaufen ist.
Ich glaube, wir haben es auch kurz mal in einer anderen Folge erklärt.
Ich glaube schon. Und ich freue mich, dass ich das mittlerweile vergessen habe, weil das war einfach eine stressige Zeit für mich.
Ja.
Aber im Großen und Ganzen war es echt einfach. Ich musste einfach die richtigen Dokumente reinschicken. Es war auch kein Problem, also dass alles auf Englisch war. Das musste ich nicht irgendwie übersetzen lassen. Aber nee, also es gab halt eine Checkliste von den Sachen, die ich reinschicken musste. Und solange man alles erfüllt hat, dann war es kein Problem.
Und dann hast du einfach jetzt so ein Anerkennungszertifikat oder was hast du jetzt dafür bekommen?
Wenn ich mich nicht irre, gibt es tatsächlich zwei Kategorien, Anerkennung und gleichgestellt. Ich habe keine Anerkennung von meinem Abschluss, sondern ich habe so ein Dokument, wo drauf steht, dass es gleichgestellt wird. Also mit einem deutschen Uni-Abschluss irgendwie gleichgestellt wird.
Und zwar steht dann da, also mit einem deutschen Bachelor-Abschluss dann, oder?
Genau, also ich weiß jetzt mittlerweile nicht mehr genau, was drauf steht. Aber da ist auf jeden Fall, also es gilt. Also für meinen Aufenthaltstitel war es kein Problem. Also die Anerkennung, glaube ich, ist wichtig, wenn du irgendwie einen Titel hast, zum Beispiel also einen geschützten, wie heißt es nochmal auf Deutsch, geschützten Arbeits, also zum Beispiel Anwalt was du dann unten in deine Signatur, in eine E-Mail schreiben würdest.
Also eine Berufsbezeichnung sozusagen.
Genau.
Sowas.
Diplom-Ingenieur,
sowas.
Zum Beispiel. Das habe ich nicht und deswegen habe ich die Anerkennung nicht gebraucht, aber um das zu kriegen, glaube ich, müsste man das anerkennen lassen.
Okay.
Aber ich habe diese gleichgestellt.
Ich habe jetzt auch gefragt, weil wir ja auch mit Frau König in der Episode geredet haben, wo sie gemeint hat, dass ihr deutsches Studium eigentlich viel mehr wert war als das, was ihr dann in den USA anerkannt wurde, glaube ich, oder? Da hat sie doch irgendwas erzählt, dass es dann nur als Bachelor anerkannt war, aber es war zu der Zeit halt, wir hatten noch ein ganz anderes Unisystem in Deutschland zu der Zeit und deswegen war das eigentlich viel mehr wert, also sie hatte eigentlich viel mehr Ausbildung bekommen als nur ein Bachelor und es wurde dann aber nur als Bachelor anerkannt oder irgendwie sowas. Wir verlinken euch die Episode auch nochmal in den Shownotes oder hier auch auf YouTube in den Infocards, dann könnt ihr da nochmal reinhören. Okay, aber quasi im Großen und Ganzen einfach ein bisschen Bürokratie, aber es war jetzt nicht wirklich schwer.
Genau, ich kann dir tatsächlich gerade sagen, wie das heißt. Die Organisation beziehungsweise der Amt?
Das Amt.
Das Amt, was dafür zuständig ist, ist Kultusministerkonferenz, Zentralstelle für ausländisches Bildungswesen. Und dann habe ich einen Antrag auf Zeugnisbewertung für einen ausländischen Hochabschluss ausfüllen müssen oder machen müssen. Mhm. Und am Ende hat man dann diese gleichgestellt, keine Ahnung, wie man das nennt.
Das sind ist wieder egal. Diese schönen deutschen bürokratischen Wörter, die einfach über drei sich Zeilen nicht gehen. Nicht
ja. Das kann man sich nicht merken, wenn man das nicht mehr braucht, ne? Aber ja, genau.
Okay, wir müssen uns ein bisschen beeilen, weil sonst müssen wir richtig viel zusammenfassen. Das wird auch richtig spaßig, die Untertitel zu schreiben. Für mich, wie gesagt, jetzt habe ich es ja eigentlich schon gesagt, also ich musste da überhaupt nichts anerkennen lassen. Ich habe ja in den USA meinen Master gemacht und als ich mich auf den Master beworben habe, musste ich einfach nur die englische Version von meinem Diplom oder halt von meinem Bachelorzeugnis einschicken und das haben wir sowieso auf Englisch bekommen von der Uni. Also wir haben es auf Deutsch und auf Englisch bekommen. Und wir haben auch die Transkripte haben wir auch halt auf Englisch verfügbar gehabt sowieso, deswegen musste ich das einfach nur alles ausdrucken und in Deutschland musst du das ja auch nicht wie in den USA von der Uni direkt schicken lassen oder sowas, das ist ja in den USA ganz komisch geregelt, finde ich, dass du keinen Zugriff auf deine Transcripts hast, sondern die Uni,
Geld jedes Mal.
Genau, und die Uni schickt es direkt an die Stelle, wo du das hingeschickt haben möchtest, wohingegen in Deutschland kannst du die halt einfach selber runterladen, die Transcripts und genau deswegen war das komplett unkompliziert und es wurde einfach eins zu eins so anerkannt halt einfach als Bachelor, wo ich eh sagen muss, es ist eh in den USA ein bisschen einfacher, das ganze System, weil du hier irgendwie, um es jetzt mal grob zusammenzufassen, fast mit jedem Bachelor, fast jeden Master studieren kannst. Also wenn du zum Beispiel einen Bachelor of Arts hast, dann kannst du einfach einen Master of Arts danach studieren und in Deutschland ist es nicht so, dass du einfach mit jedem Bachelor dann jeden Master danach machen kannst.
Ah, okay. Ja, also ganz ehrlich gesagt, mit Master und so kenne ich mich nicht so gut aus, deswegen kann ich
ja. Ja, es ist auf jeden Fall, also so kann ich es auf jeden Fall zusammenfassen, ist auf jeden Fall viel flexibler in den USA. Wohingegen in Deutschland, weil das halt das System erst vor kürzerer Zeit eigentlich erst umgestellt wurde von dem alten deutschen Studiumssystem auf das internationale eben, ist es halt immer noch so ein bisschen komplizierter, weil sie es halt immer noch versucht haben, an das Alte anzupassen, dass das halt irgendwie alles auch fair bleibt und irgendwie Sinn ergibt. Aber was jetzt halt gut funktioniert hat, ist, die Umstellung haben sie ja eigentlich unter anderem deswegen gemacht, dass halt die deutschen Uni-Abschlüsse international einheitlicher sind und dass die Deutschen halt flexibler sind, wenn sie irgendwie international Karriere machen wollen. Und das haben sie auf jeden Fall hingekriegt, weil das hat nämlich bei mir problemlos geklappt.
Ja, super. Genau. Nee, das ist ja ideal, ne? Sollen wir das kurz mal auf Englisch jetzt zusammenfassen?
Yeah, let's try to summarize it, but it's been a lot. So basically, your process was fairly easy, you said, just kind of bureaucratic.
Yeah, and I didn't say it particularly well in German because I forgot everything that I had to do, basically. But yeah, there's a German organization or government agency that you then just have to get the checklist of all of the documents that they need to be able to do the evaluation of your degree, and you send it in and then pay your fee, and then they give you the appropriate degree recognition. There's a difference between actually recognizing the degree and just saying it's like giving you the official approval to say that it's basically equivalent. There's like a slight distinction there, but generally it's a really easy process as long as you follow all of the rules and checklists, which is typical for German bureaucracy or bureaucracy in general, really.
Yeah, and you didn't have to get it translated either, which is good. Cool. Exactly. And then for me, well, we just kind of talked about general background knowledge in this context because the German university system has been changed, like the kind of degrees that we have, the kind of programs that we have, and the way that university works really was changed in, I want to say, the late 90s, early 2000s, something like that, or like 2005, around that time, something like that. We basically changed to the bachelor's and master's system, which we didn't have that before in Germany. And in my case, I just wanted to say that that actually worked really well because the reason why they changed that was basically for German students to be more competitive internationally and to be more flexible internationally. And that really worked for me because I was just able to get my diploma, or not able, I already had my diploma also in English and I had my transcripts in English too. And I just submitted that to the University of Cincinnati when I applied for my master's there. And yeah, that was it. And they just accepted it. And we also talked about how in Germany that is also a little bit easier to do because you don't have to request the transcripts from a university and then pay a fee for it, but you just have access to them usually and you can just download them yourself. Whereas in the US, it's common that for those kinds of things, like, for example, every time you apply for a master's or any other kind of program where you need your former transcripts from your university, you have to contact your university, pay a fee, and then they send it directly to that other institution. And you never actually get to see it yourself, which is different
in
Germany.
Yeah, I mean, you can... And I didn't say this in the German portion, but yeah, you can download a version for yourself for your records, but oftentimes wherever you're sending them requires them to come directly from the university to avoid you being able to tamper with it or counterfeit anything.
Yeah, so like the version that you can download doesn't really count officially, whereas at German universities that usually counts, or in some cases you have to have it beglaubigt. So like it's almost like notarized, but it's not an actual... Notar? Is that what they're called?
It's a notary.
Notary. Yeah. I knew that. Uh-huh. I knew. But the university can just do it, basically. But that doesn't cost you anything. You just have to go there in person. Anyways, that was a lot of complicated, dry stuff. So let's move on to the next question.
Let's see if the next question is... I don't want to say more exciting because I think it's helpful
more personal.
Information.
More it's personal. More personal. Also, you keep leaning on your desk, Josh.
Sorry. I can hear.
You're good. At least people know where it's coming from.
Yes.
Okay, should I read the next one?
Sure.
It comes from Ira Bradarik. Ira Bradarik. And the question is, how was the reaction of your parents when you told them you wanted to live in the US/Germany? Dum, dum, dum.
Do you want to answer this one first or should I?
I can answer it, but I don't really have a crazy story because I never really told my parents that. I just went on an exchange semester and my parents were supportive of that. And then when I wanted to go back afterwards for a short amount of time, they were supportive of that. And basically my parents have been supportive the whole time. And I don't really think they suffer from me being gone. I mean, I'm sure they miss me sometimes and I miss them, but we're in touch a lot and our relationship really hasn't suffered from being in different countries. If anything, I feel like we're almost in contact more closely now than we were before. So yeah, basically I never had that moment where I was like, parents, sit down, I have to tell you something. Maybe it was the time when I got the green card, but really I always told them that it was going to be something, like you said, where I'll just have to see. I don't know yet. I probably am not going to be in the US forever, but at least now it's going to be easier for me to be in the US with a green card. So they were happy for me for that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that answers the question. How was it for
you? Yeah, in my situation, it was a little more difficult. I mean, I had been back and forth between Germany, like doing 3 month stints basically. And in those 3 months, especially the last 3 months I had done in Germany, I wasn't doing well personally. So like I was excited to come back to the US and my family, I think, was like, oh, he got it out of his system and now he's here to stay. So then when the opportunity presented itself for me to actually move over to Germany, I think they were probably a little surprised or maybe just disappointed that I was contemplating the idea again. So they took it generally well. I mean, it was hard on them for sure. I mean, there were some hard conversations that had to be had, but I think that's normal. And the fact that I had spent all of my life basically in Cincinnati prior to that didn't make it easier, and my whole family lives there. So, it wasn't necessarily the easiest thing, and I definitely miss them, and I know it hasn't been easy on them. But such is life, and I think everyone is adjusting, and it's just a matter of finding a new normal. But yeah, so it wasn't the easiest thing, neither for them nor for me.
Yeah.
But I'm very happy with my decision, and it's been good for me, and our relationship has continued to grow, like with my parents as well. Just a matter of staying in contact and figuring out new ways to stay connected. So
yeah.
So yeah.
Cool. All right.
The next question, which is in German, so we're going to respond in German again, is from Dalamusta. I don't know. Dalamuster. And the question is, Wo ist das Leben teurer? Also verhältnismäßig Lohn, Essen und Wohnen. So where is life more expensive in relation to, like, I guess Lohn would be like salary. Mm-hmm. But that's not really a matter of it being more expensive. Food and cost of living, essentially.
I think the also verhältnismäßig means like, so in relation to or in proportion to your salary. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Anyway,
okay.
I think.
Dann habe ich das nicht so ganz verstanden.
I think that's what she means. Yeah. Or he, I don't know. I think that's what the person means. Zuallererst mal, glaube ich, ist es irgendwie schwer, jetzt zum Beispiel Cincinnati und München miteinander zu vergleichen. Aber wenn man jetzt allgemein die Länder miteinander vergleicht, kann man auf jeden Fall schon mal definitiv sagen, dass Löhne allgemein höher sind in den USA als in Deutschland. Essen ist auf jeden Fall billiger in Deutschland als in den USA. Zumindest Lebensmittel.
Also Lebensmittel, ja, genau.
Und Wohnen hängt halt voll davon ab. Ich glaube aber, insgesamt ist der Durchschnitt in den USA höher für Miete und sowas.
Genau, also
im Durchschnitt.
Ich habe mir die offiziellen Zahlen nicht angeschaut, aber ich kann von meiner persönlichen Erfahrung, sprechen. Und ich meine, die Deutschen beschweren sich immer, dass München so teuer ist. Es ist zwar teuer, aber ich würde wahrscheinlich fast genauso viel in Cincinnati für eine schöne Wohnung ausgeben, wie ich hier in München ausgebe.
Du hast aber auch echt Glück gehabt.
Ja, also da kann ich mich nicht beschweren. Aber nee, also ich würde mich deiner Antwort anschließen und ich sag mal, es ist genau, also Essen ist halt hier in Deutschland billiger, in den USA teurer. Das, was so in Restaurants und Essen und so, glaube ich, ist in Deutschland vielleicht ein bisschen teurer als in den USA.
Kommt aber auch drauf an. Ich finde, es gibt auch echt viele, wo es überhaupt nicht teuer ist und die Qualität ist eigentlich immer viel besser, finde ich jetzt. Mhm. Also aus meiner Erfahrung finde ich eigentlich, dass es echt schwer ist, in Deutschland ins Restaurant zu gehen und richtig schlechtes Essen zu kriegen. Wohingegen hier, finde ich, ja, kommt schon echt
drauf vor. Da hast du auf jeden Fall recht und ich möchte auch dazu sagen, ich will die USA auch nicht
verallgemeinern.
Also Cincinnati kann man mit San Francisco zum Beispiel nicht vergleichen. San Francisco ist sauteuer, New York ist sauteuer.
Ist das jetzt nicht inzwischen, glaube ich, die teuerste Stadt für Miete? Ich glaube, da habe ich letztens irgendwas gelesen, dass es New York City überholt hat. Chicago ist auch sehr teuer zum Beispiel. Ja. Eigentlich Kalifornien allgemein ist extrem teuer, wo ja halt viele Leute, die dann auswandern, wandern ja oft nach Kalifornien aus. Genau. Da ist auch zum Beispiel die Benzinpreise sind da extrem hoch. Das ist zum Beispiel auch noch was eigentlich hier total cool ist, ist, dass der Benzinpreis, ich weiß gerade gar nicht, was der aktuelle Benzinpreis ist, ehrlich gesagt, aber normalerweise ist es in den USA ungefähr so ein Drittel vom deutschen Preis. Also deswegen ist halt auch Autofahren viel billiger.
Eben, genau. Ja. Aber mehr dazu zu sagen, glaube ich, habe ich nicht. Aber es ist natürlich wichtig, dass man nicht einfach sagt, die USA ist teurer oder billiger. Es kommt auf die Stadt an.
Ja, aber ich glaube,
das Gleiche gilt auch in Deutschland.
Ja, voll. Ich glaube halt, im Durchschnitt ist auf jeden Fall sind die Mietpreise und auch die Lebensmittelpreise in den USA durchschnittlich höher als in Deutschland.
Und die Löhne dann entsprechend auch.
Und die Löhne auch, genau. Aber zum Beispiel hier in Cincinnati hat man dann den Vorteil, da sind dann zum Beispiel die Mieten halt nicht so hoch wie in San Francisco, aber trotzdem sind die Löhne höher. Essen ist aber überall teuer eigentlich, außer Fast Food. Deswegen ist es auch, das war halt eine so der krassesten Sachen, die ich so hier erlebt habe, ist halt, dass es für manche Leute, die nicht so viel verdienen, billiger ist, Fast Food zu essen, als sich Lebensmittel zu kaufen. Das kenne ich halt aus Deutschland überhaupt nicht. Das wäre nie der Fall. Es ist immer billiger, Lebensmittel zu kaufen, weil du eigentlich alles für relativ billig kriegst und halt auch gute, gesunde Lebensmittel und halt ein Brot mit Frischkäse oder was weiß ich, halt ein kleiner Snack, viel billiger ist trotzdem immer noch, als zu McDonald's zu gehen oder sowas.
Genau. Nee, voll. Es ist ein bisschen schade, wie es so gestalten ist in den USA, dass das überhaupt der Fall sein kann. Aber es ist so. Exactly.
Okay.
So maybe summarizing that.
Exactly. Here Josh comes with his Germanism.
Maybe summarizing somewhat in English what we just talked about, that generally salaries in the U.S. are higher than in Germany, but at the same time then rents and, we really only talked about rents, which is funny because I feel like at least in Germany, that tends to be the topic is what are the rents as opposed to what is property value.
I don't know about that actually in all of Germany. I just know that if you compare Munich with Cincinnati, Munich is insanely expensive when it comes to property value.
Very much so. But essentially, rents tend to be higher in the US than generally in Germany. And like groceries tend to be more expensive in the US than in Germany. But on the other hand, then eating out, especially at like fast food places, is cheaper in the US than it is in Germany.
And then overall, we just said that you can't really compare a whole country with a whole other country. Obviously, it kind of depends on the place that you live in, such as San Francisco. We talked about that probably because I wasn't sure if I remembered it correctly, but I think that San Francisco has passed New York City recently as the for the highest rent prices, at least.
Yeah.
So those kinds of places are just insanely expensive to live in.
Yeah.
And so Munich,
then skews then the average as well. But
yeah. And then you said that Munich isn't even that expensive compared to some of those American cities, which is also true. But then I also said that you got really lucky.
Yeah.
So, it really all depends. One thing that we didn't mention is taxes. Obviously, taxes are higher in Germany. So even Woo-hoo. Though your salary is already lower, but also you get a lot in return, especially when you live in a bigger city. I feel like you really can take advantage of those things like public transportation, for example, or free education. If you wanted to go get a master's, you can just go and basically pay nothing for it.
So
you do get a lot in return, at least from my perspective. Some other people disagree with that, but yeah. So difficult to really give a clear response here. But the next question comes from Van M. Doe, and it's directed at Josh. It says, Josh, do you think Germany needs to be more patriotic outside of EM/VM, so the European Soccer Cup and the World Cup, like the US?
Man, I feel like called out by having to answer this just me, but of course I want to hear your opinion on it too. I mean, I think I already know generally what your opinion is, but I would say I don't think so. I think Germans oftentimes are they like their country. I think a lot of people tend to be, I hesitate to say the word proud, but they're happy to be German, and they're appreciative of what they have in Germany. So I think there isn't really like a lack of national identity or a lack of patriotism, if you will. I actually kind of like the fact that it's not exaggerated. I think when you're taken out of the U.S., you see that it sometimes is kind of over the top, the patriotism that is shown. And I kind of like a little bit more of the level-headed aspect when it comes to patriotism. And I would say there's a healthy respect of what patriotism or extreme patriotism may lead to. And I think that leads to the general public being somewhat maybe a little more open. But I don't want to step on any toes. I mean, I come from a very patriotic family, and I do like being American. So I'm not trying to say that I don't like the U.S. I think the U.S. has its challenges, but it also has a lot of really good aspects as well. So definitely not trying to hate on people who, like, for example, fly a flag out in front of their yard. I mean, my grandparents constantly have an American flag in their yard. So I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing to like the country that you're from and be proud of the achievements that maybe your family in a country has contributed to, for example. But I think it's everything is good in moderation and in measure. And I think that's one thing that I appreciate about Germany is, like I said, I know quite a few Germans who are happy to be German and they're really happy with the country and the progress that it's made and where it finds itself nowadays. But I like the level-headed approach, but that's just my personal opinion. And I don't think, like I said, that patriotism when kept in check and based off of facts and things that are based in reality is necessarily a bad thing.
Yeah. I have a question for you, Josh. How many times, if you remember, have you heard, if at all, the German national anthem since you've been in Germany?
I don't think, well, I won't say once because the European Championship was going on.
Yeah.
So maybe like twice, but not very often.
Yeah.
And I mean, I don't want to get into the politics of it, but with the whole like the situation that's going on in Afghanistan right now, it's been interesting to hear Germans' perspective on the way that the U.S. has handled that. Like I said, I don't want to get into details, but it's just interesting to get a third-party perspective, because based off of U.S. media, it's always very much like the U.S. versus the world, basically. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have our allies, but it's just been interesting to get a perspective from a completely different nation. Yeah. That's an allied nation, but just a different perspective.
Yeah. But also, like, yeah, as you said before, we do report a lot about American politics anyways. And in this case, also, obviously, it's a world matter. And also, we were involved in it, too.
Exactly.
So, yeah, that will be interesting to hear that from another perspective other than just American media. I agree with what you said, basically. I mean, I wasn't even asked in this question, but I feel like it's tricky to say that a country needs to be more patriotic, because I don't think anyone needs to do that. I do think that sometimes Germans can be a little hard on themselves, even because when you go, like, it kind of depends on what aspects you, or like what kind of perspective you look at this matter through, like what kind of glasses you have on when you look at this. But in like pop culture, almost, being German is considered by Germans, it's not always considered being cool. Like if you just use the word, like it's almost an equivalent to what people will say in the US of being white, which we don't say white, because like in Germany, we don't really have that race issue all that much. But it's more like, are you German or do you have a migration background? Are you cool because you're half something, you're half, you know, from the Baltics or from Italy or whatever. That's at least how I experienced it a lot growing up. Like I was called a German potato a lot, which was an insult. And I'm not trying to like say anything against like bullying in high school right now or whatever. Like that's not the topic I'm trying to get into. But overall, just like being German doesn't always have the connotation of being cool in Germany. Whereas I feel like in the US, being an American has like, wow, like I'm American. Like that has a strong positive connotation to it. And that I do think I do find sad sometimes in Germany that Germans kind of hate on themselves so much in a way. And also like Germans don't like being on vacation with other Germans. Like they're embarrassed to see other Germans there because like, oh my God, they're acting so German. Or you can just tell by their outfit that they're German tourists. Stuff like that, which is all fun and games, but at the same time, it kind of does reflect a little bit on how we do look at our own, national pride in a way. And also from a German perspective, once you do see flags outside of houses, which you do see that here everywhere, as you said, like people have flags on their cars in front of their houses. American flags are at businesses, anywhere, even when there's no elections. Some communities even have little flags on their lanterns, like on the street. So that's something that you won't ever see in Germany, really. There it might be some government buildings or something like that that have a Germany flag outside. But if you see that on a private home, you'll think one of two things usually as a German. You'll either be like, wait, is it a soccer event already or Olympics or something like that? Because that's usually the one time when everyone gets their flags out. Or, this might be kind of like a very nationalist person, maybe an extremist person. So you kind of get like skeptical almost. So those are just my comments.
It's a very complicated topic. And I would agree with you with what you were saying as well. It's a difficult topic, but I think just trying to approach it in the sense of trying to be, like I said, level-headed and take everything in moderation. And
that's the key always, I feel like, in almost every topic, so 100%. One more thing that I really do like about how Germany handles things in certain ways, though, this might not be directly connected to patriotism, but in my mind it is how you deal with dark things that happened in the nation's past. And I do think that Germany does a fairly good job with this, especially when dealing with Nazi Germany and everything. We talk about it a lot and we do take responsibility in, I'm not saying that we're perfect in how we do it, but I think the nation as a nation does try to take responsibility and has been doing that for a few decades now. After the war, that was definitely lacking for a few decades there. But I find that sad that in the U.S. that doesn't always happen a lot. And a lot of people think or seem to believe that criticizing your own country's past doesn't go together with being patriotic, where I find that that's not true at all. I feel like you can be even more patriotic and proud of your country if you also acknowledge that your country has done bad things in the past and that the truth is rough sometimes and that the truth is not as nice as you might have been told as a kid, and that you take responsibility for it now, better late than never. And that doesn't mean that you're not patriotic. Yeah. And I feel like sometimes in the U.S., I struggle with people thinking that it's either one or the other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I would totally agree with that. I think, I think that was really well formulated, your response. I would totally agree with the fact of, like, just because you... I criticize the U.S. oftentimes because I care about it and I want it to be the best possible version of itself from my perspective. Maybe people will disagree with my criticisms, but just because I'm criticizing something doesn't necessarily mean that I'm not proud of it or that I don't care about it. It's me wishing the best future for the U.S. So I think that's something that that the U.S. as a general population on both sides of whatever political aisle you may be could definitely get better at is being okay with criticism and looking at the dark sides of the country, which every country has dark sides to it.
Yeah.
So yeah, right, that's topic.
That got really serious really quickly. Okay, let's do one last question because we do have to wrap it up and we didn't get through all the questions, of course. Surprise. Or I guess it's not really a surprise.
I was going to say, not too surprising anymore.
Okay, so the last question that we wanted to look at is, würdet/wollt ihr eure Familien zu euch holen, also für immer? So do you want to, or are you planning on moving your families to you forever? It's kind of hard to translate. I don't know how to translate that.
Yeah, essentially me bringing my family to Germany or your family going to the U.S.
Yes.
And my answer would probably, I mean, in an ideal world, I would be living in Germany with my family. But at the same time, I can't picture my family here in Germany.
Yeah.
So no, I'm not planning on it. And would I do it? I don't know. For me, my family belongs in the U.S. Of course, I'd be happy if they wanted to come here, but it just would be weird to have them here now that I'm thinking about it.
Yeah, so, it would be like people from the one world suddenly being in the other world. It wouldn't really go together in your mind.
And especially in my family's case, they don't speak German. And you can live in Germany without speaking German, but that would pose a lot of issues for their day-to-day life.
Yeah.
So I think that's why it's so far out, the thought, like completely out of the realm of reality or possibility, that I would say no would be my answer to it. But of course, in an ideal world, I would have them significantly closer.
Yeah. No, same for me. I'm not trying to bring my family here because why would I? Like, they choose their own lives and they live in Germany, and why would they just come and it's not like we're from a bad country, you know. It's not like I'm a refugee and I'm trying to get my family here because we had bad circumstances where we're from. The circumstances are actually extremely good, so why would they leave everything behind? I could see my parents maybe when they're retired come here for a little bit or something like that. I don't know if they've considered that. I think they've definitely considered living in a warmer climate, at least for like maybe half the year when they're retired. So I could see them do that maybe, or even my brother maybe at some point down the road living in the U.S. temporarily for an exchange semester also, or for work, or who knows, being a digital nomad. But in general, I'm not trying to move my family here just so that we can all be together in this country, because this is my life. This is the journey that I chose to go on to, and it's not their journey. So, no.
Yeah. No, and I don't think my family would necessarily move here willingly.
Yeah, it'd be kind of weird. It's a different story if you're a parent, for example, to bring your family with you, your kids, for example. That's a whole different story. But bringing your parents with you, unless they suffer where they live right now, doesn't really seem to make sense, honestly.
Yeah, and I think like in the case that for whatever reason they would need my support or any sort of like medical care or assistance, I would be more likely to move back to the U.S. to be with them than expect them to move here for them to be closer to me to take care of them.
Same.
That's my answer.
That's the answer, and that's also the last question that we're going to talk about today, because we've been recording for a while.
Yes.
thank you guys for listening. Hopefully you enjoyed it. I don't know what we're going to do with the remaining questions, if we should just answer those maybe on Instagram or yet again promise people that we're going to do this in the future at some point. I guess maybe we're going to have to decide.
Yeah, I was going to say maybe, and then we can talk about this, but maybe a fun thing could be to do like an Instagram live and we answer some of the questions.
Yeah, that'd be cool. So with that being said, make sure that you follow us on Instagram. So if we do decide to do that, that you don't miss the Instagram live stream. We could technically maybe also do a YouTube live stream or something. Yeah. But our Instagram account is at Understanding Train Station. So go follow us there. We don't post a lot, but when we do post, it's interesting. such as today when we asked you guys to submit questions. These were all from people on Instagram today. And then you can also message us on there if you want to. Other ways to contact us include you can send us an email at understandingtrainstation@gmail.com. And you can also support us on either Patreon or buymeacoffee.com. It's patreon.com/understandingtrainstation or buymeacoffee.com/UTS podcast. And you can support us monetarily there. And on Patreon, you also get little perks. So for example, you'll get some bloopers every now and then from our episodes. You get to participate in monthly hangout sessions with us where we can just hang out and talk on Google Meets. Yeah. And what else? Oh, you can also buy our merch on feedingfromgermany.com. And I think that's it.
I'm just going to say, I really enjoy the Google Hangout. So if you guys want to talk to us in person and have some back and forth with us, that's a great opportunity. And I'll just give a shout out to our patrons who've been supporting us. They're very loyal and very appreciative of them. So thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you guys for supporting us. And of course, also thank you for giving us a thumbs up on YouTube, a subscription on YouTube, subscription on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, leaving a comment on YouTube, leaving a review on Apple Podcasts. All these things are greatly appreciated and very supportive for us, very helpful. So yeah, thanks for that. And we hope that you're all staying safe and healthy in these times. And you'll hear us again in 2 weeks on Thursday. Yeah.
And if you're in Germany, stay warm because this is ridiculous, this weather.
And if you're in the U.S., stay cold. No, I'm just kidding. The U.S. has so many different climate zones. It's actually cold today in Cincinnati because of the hurricane. Okay. We kind of got a little bit of rain in here. But yeah, until next time, tschüss.
Ciao.